Community Connections at CKMS. Local sounds, thoughts, passions, and success. Celebrate local. Your neighbor's got a story to tell. Community Connections at CKMS.
Happy Friday, Waterloo Region. You're listening to CKMS Community Connections for the 8th of December, 2023. My name is Bob Jonkman. In the studio today, we've got Margaret Jackson from Amnesty International Group 9, the local KW chapter. We're going to be talking about the Right for Rights campaign, which starts tomorrow. And we'll be going on for just the one day, isn't it?
Yes, one day at the KPL from 11 to 4,
okay.
Main branch.
Let's have a quick listen to some music to start off with. We're going to start with Joy to the World, which is what Right for Rights campaign is trying to achieve. This is from Jamie Bonk, new music to CKMS Community Connections. Jamie Bonk, Joy to the World. New release, which we got into our library just last night. Jamie writes he'd like to submit his new Christmas single, classic Joy to the World, for our consideration. He says it's its first release of Christmas music in 10 years, and it features one of the most complex arrangements of any songs that he's ever done. Lots of instrumentals and orchestral and vocal layers that intertwine with his nylon string guitar. Joy to the World is a good theme. That's what Amnesty International is trying to achieve with their Right for Rights campaign. We've got Margaret Jackson in the studio from our local KW chapter, Group 9. Welcome to CKMS Community Connections.
Thank you, Bob.
Tell Tell me more about Right for Rights. How long has that been going on? And
yeah, that's a good question. Oh. I don't even know the answer to that. It's been going on for many years, and every year that it's held, there are 10 cases chosen around the world by the Amnesty International offices that are in many different countries, including mm-hmm. in Canada. They agree on 10 cases that they will focus on for this campaign and just create a blitz of letters going to governments and other people involved in human rights abuses and requesting politely that they make changes. And the amazing thing is that over the years, we have had many successes with the cases that we take up for Right for Rights.
Really? I'm surprised, because you would think that writing a letter to your local politician or to your foreign heads of state is pretty much going to fall on deaf ears. You know, it's something that's very easily ignored, but you're saying that it's a fairly successful campaign.
That's right. It might be easy to ignore one letter, but with the Right for Rights campaign, governments often receive 500,000 letters.
500,000, half a million letters.
Yeah. So there would be generally, 5 to 7 million participants in this activity every year. It's very focused. And with focusing on 10 cases, this year we have 11 in Canada, but focusing on 10 cases around the world, when we say like a blitz of letters, they do receive many, many letters. And so the focus, the spotlight is on those countries for what they're doing in those particular cases. And in many cases, there are people who are incarcerated, people who are undergoing unfair trials and that, and the governments do back off on that. So it's not as if all the human rights in the world have been suddenly taken care of, but those particular 10 cases do see changes.
Right. And the campaigns that Right for Rights is targeting is always towards an individual, or is it sometimes larger conceptual ideas?
We often will use the individual as a spearhead for a wider campaign. For mm-hmm. example, this year in South Africa, one of the campaigns we're doing focuses on a person whose name is Tapelo Mohapi, but he's also part of a movement called the ABM movement, mm-hmm. which is working to improve conditions for people who are living in terrible conditions with very few services, very few human rights, and they're under attack by government-supported forces. And because of the work that these people are doing to protect these very vulnerable people in their society, they are being attacked, threatened, and threatened with death. And so basically the campaign will request the South African government to stop the harassment of this group and to actually protect the members of the group to continue doing what they are doing, which is making life better for a group of very vulnerable South Africans.
Right. And this gentleman, Thulani Maseko, what condition is he in at the moment?
Well, Tapelo Mohapi, he's the one that
is
the... Yes, it's hard, I know, to to get the names right. Basically, he is unable to live his normal life because he is being forced to live in hiding because there have been threats against his life. And he is the general secretary of the movement.
Okay.
So we're asking for the movement itself to be protected, and particularly this one person whose life is in danger. Right. He can't, he's like a dad, he's got kids, he has a family, and he's not able to be with his family and be with his friends and enjoy his life because he is under threat of death and no one is protecting him, particularly his own government is not.
And so you have him as one of the focuses for a letter to be sent out to the South African government.
That's right. And what we're doing for each one of the cases, which is kind of interesting, so we send a letter to the governments that are the guilty parties, asking them to make a change. But what we also do is we send a card of support to the people. So often what we'll do is people will sit down and they'll create their own cards, putting pictures in there that will be relevant to the situation and include a message saying, we support you in what you're doing, thank you for standing up for human rights, that kind of thing, and send that letter off to them directly. In some cases, it will go to an Amnesty International office. There is one in South Africa, mm-hmm. and they will make sure that it gets to the person. And so there are ways to get these messages out even to people who are incarcerated.
Right.
And after the Right for Rights campaign is over every year, we hear back. We hear back from people who have received these letters of support, not necessarily personally, but Amnesty hears back, and then they pass the message on to the people who've been involved. And it's wonderful, actually, to get the reaction of people who said that, you know, like they were in the deepest depths of despair, and getting thousands of letters from people all over the world saying that they supported them and what they were doing made a big difference to them to be able to carry on.
And that's encouraging to the people who are doing the writing, because it shows them that there has been some effect to their efforts, and do it again next year.
Absolutely. That's a big motivation for me personally when I hear back from people like that who have actually been helped by those little pictures that I drew and comments that I made and sent off.
Really? That's excellent. Yeah. I was getting that particular case confused with another one at the top of your list of writing campaigns. Somebody named Tulani Maseko from Eswatini, I think formerly Swaziland.
That's correct.
And the letter starts off, I am writing to you from Kitchener, Waterloo, Canada, to express my dismay about the killing of Tulani Maseko.
Yes.
That's pretty distressing.
Very, very
this
sad.
This is addressed to His Majesty King Mswati III of Eswatini.
Right.
And so that was the one that struck me right off the top from the list of your recommended letters.
Right.
What can be done in this particular case here?
Well, in this case, what is being requested is that people be held to account. So doing a proper investigation of the murder and taking and holding the people who are responsible for that to account. It's pretty hard to hold the king himself responsible. Mm-hmm. However, the government itself has been, one of the reasons that this person was killed was because he was speaking up for rights in the country, and the government is basically having very repressive laws, using state violence against people, especially using state violence to silence peaceful protest.
Mm-hmm.
Tulani Maseko was a lawyer and a defender of human rights in his country. And the king had made a statement saying that, we should take care of these people who are criticizing the government, and then he's killed. And so holding the people for responsible for that, then the king had said, people should not shed tears and complain about mercenaries killing these people. So the request is to investigate that.
Very much a different concept of what we expect governments to do.
That's right. Of what we hope governments would do, definitely not standing up for people at all. About 60% of the people in Eswatini are below the poverty line, and living in very difficult conditions. And Tulani Maseko was a lawyer who was standing up for their rights and got punished for doing that. And the request is, not to let that go unresolved.
Right. It seems to me that there's a lot of that going on in all corners of the world. How does Amnesty International decide which 10 cases to focus on for our Right for Rights campaign?
That is a very difficult question in the sense that it's like, we have people's lives in our hands, and how on earth would we decide? It's when we come up with 10 cases, or we being Amnesty International, there are so many cases that are not focused on in the Right for Rights. And the ones that are focused on, I believe, are the ones that Amnesty thinks will get some response. Okay. So that all through the year, we're slogging on all these cases, many, many cases around the world, and then 10 cases are chosen where Amnesty thinks, we see that there's a possibility of something happening here. Let's focus on these, because that is important for everyone to see that the actions that we take can have a positive effect.
Right. That seems a little awkward in that the cases of greatest despair, where there's very little chance of change, don't get that attention.
They don't get that particular attention, but they do get attention consistently throughout the year. And Amnesty International, along with other groups like Human Rights Watch, they're constantly researching what's going on, making sure they have the facts, and getting those cases, bringing them forward to people who will take action, making recommendations to governments that can perhaps put pressure on other governments, and that's like I say, that's the daily slog. That works too. But that is kind of behind the scenes a lot of the time, and when we're kind of trying to draw people's attention to what can be done, it's important that they can see that there's going to be some immediate success.
Right. Can you just briefly go over the list of the 10 or 11 cases that you'll be addressing?
Okay, well, we looked at the first two, which were the South Africa and Eswatini cases. The third one on our list is actually got a very strong local connection. And that one is from Hmong Sawadola, from the Rohingya people. And we have a considerable Rohingya population here in Kitchener-Waterloo.
Really?
And the center of Rohingya population in Canada is here. Like, this is where most of the people, the majority of the people, ended up.
In Waterloo region.
And there was just recently an article in The Record focusing on another person who's involved in this same case. So the case that we're looking at is a young man, Rohingya, who together with his family was forced to flee Myanmar in 2017 when the government in Myanmar had been abusing the human rights of Rohingya people for a long time. But in 2017, there was a really large genocidal campaign against the Rohingya. And in total, close to a million people, refugees, fled over the border from Myanmar into Bangladesh to a place called Cox's Bazar, which is now the world's largest refugee camp. Hmm. And in doing this, in mounting this campaign, the Myanmar government used Facebook to incite violence against Rohingya people and support the actions of the military against the Rohingya people. Villages were destroyed, burned to the ground. People were killed. Women were raped. The list of atrocities goes on and on. And of course, the people now who are living in Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh in refugee camp with close to a million people residing in it are not living in very good conditions.
Right.
And so what this young man and his family and community are doing is they are calling on Facebook to take some responsibility for what happened. They did nothing to stop the incitement on Facebook. And so what they're asking for is financial reparation and for that money to go to the people in Cox's Bazar who are desperate, absolutely desperate, in need for help, and particularly to go towards education, which is something that they don't have access to very much in a huge refugee camp like that.
So the letter is going to Facebook rather than a government?
That's right. So well, that's an unusual thing. We're mostly sending letters to government. And there's a young man at the at Conestoga College studying there now who's also part of this legal action against Facebook. And Amnesty is supporting that by, you know, sending letters to Facebook saying, we agree, you should be paying reparations. This is something that you should take responsibility for.
Has Facebook even acknowledged that this is an issue, that they may have some...
Not yet, but maybe once they get their 600,000 letters, they might have to say something about it.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a major case with a Canadian connection. And several years ago, in our Amnesty Right for Rights actions, we took action on the Rohingya situation as well, and had local people speaking at our event about that.
Right. Anything else fairly local?
Well, I would say that the number 11 on our list, the Wet'suwet'en Land Defenders, is local in the sense of it being Canadian.
Right.
And this is a case that actually has been going on for much too long, and it's part of a larger situation of how the Canadian governments and the provincial governments relate to Indigenous peoples in Canada. Okay. So the Wet'suwet'en case is we're looking for the Canadian and the British Columbia government to stop what we call the criminalization of the Wet'suwet'en land defenders. And Wet'suwet'en territory is in northern British Columbia, northern and central British Columbia. Mm-hmm. And this is the area that the Coastal GAS pipeline is being built across.
Right. And it's unceded land. It's land that was never subject to any treaty.
That's right. In Ontario, we're not so aware of the fact that there are areas in Canada that haven't been covered by treaty. And British Columbia, a lot of the land of British Columbia was never covered by treaty, because right from the start of the British Columbia colonial government, they refused to deal with Indigenous people at all. And it was only in modern times that they were actually forced to sit down at the table and negotiate treaties with the Indigenous people in British Columbia. The first one that they negotiated was the Nisga Treaty, and I think that was in 1990-something that it finally was settled.
From what I understand is that the people, First Nations people on the West Coast, learned from the tragedy of letting themselves be subject to the treaties in Eastern Canada, and so decided that that was not something that they wanted to subject their own lands and people to.
Yes, it's quite a complicated issue because, for example, with the Nisga, they were looking for a treaty right from the start and had a very long history of people going down to Victoria and banging on the door of the parliament in Victoria saying, mm-hmm. We need to talk. And the provincial government just would not speak to them at all. And they finally got a result.
So this letter is addressed to the British Columbia provincial government?
Yes, it is. Okay. And actually, with the Wet'suwet'en, we are doing a petition. So we have a petition for the Wet'suwet'en people. And one of the reasons for that is that this is an ongoing issue for Group 9 in particular. And over the summer, over the past year, last year as well, we had letters, we've signed petitions, and we're just using this petition because the wording of the petition is different from previous ones and letters.
Okay. So it's a different petition from something that we may have signed earlier.
That's right. Yeah. So we don't want people to be signing the same thing over and over again. It needs to be changed up a little bit. But unfortunately, it is the same thing over and over again. The one difference this time is that the focus is on the criminalization rather than trying to stop the pipeline, because all parts of the pipeline are now complete, sadly. All right. Yeah. So, but the people who have been standing up for their land, and rightfully so, it's their responsibility to do that as the land defenders. And these people have been criminalized. And what we mean by that is that they have been charged and they will be put on trial, and that they could end up going to jail for doing what they really are required to do by their own laws on their own unceded territory.
Because recognizing First Nations would not subject them to Canadian law necessarily. So what they are doing is protecting a sovereign territory, their sovereign territory.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
true. And also the responsibility of the traditional chiefs is to take care of the whole land. And the Canadian government has signed the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And in signing that, they said that they would properly consult with Indigenous peoples over use of their land. And they did not do this. They didn't consult properly.
Didn't consult meaningfully.
That's right. Yes. They can use that word consult, but they didn't do it even according to the way it's laid out in the United Nations Declaration.
Right. Do you have a letter in front of you to the British Columbia government?
Since we were doing a petition,
Is the wording of the petition similar to what's in the
letter? The wording of the petition is very short, but I personally have written a letter, so I'm going to send my letter as well as part of this campaign. And it goes to David Eby, Premier of BC. Oh. Now, there's a local connection because he's actually from the Waterloo region.
Oh.
And I think, oh, he went to school here. You know, he should know better. And so what I said in it is, I'm writing to you from Kitchener-Waterloo to express my concern about the criminalization of the Wet'suwet'en land defenders. For several years now, Wet'suwet'en land defenders have been harassed, intimidated, forcibly removed, and criminalized by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police for opposing the construction of the Coastal GasLink pipeline on their territories. 20 land defenders were charged with criminal contempt by the British Columbia Prosecution Service for allegedly disobeying an injunction order to stay away from pipeline construction sites, even though these sites are situated on the nation's unceded ancestral territory. 5 of the land defenders pled guilty in December 2022 as a result of their bail conditions, which prohibited them from being on the Wet'suwet'en territory and any other frontline resistance against extractive projects across Canada. Several of the land defenders' trials have already started in May 2023 and will continue in January 2024. So that's really happening right now. If found guilty, they could be sentenced to prison. I call on you to drop the charges against Wet'suwet'en land defenders. I respect the rights of the Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs to protect their unceded territories. It's time for all governments in Canada to honour the rights of the First Nations peoples. I'm ashamed to see how the Canadian and provincial governments continue to abuse the human rights of the original inhabitants of these lands.
That's pretty powerful. This is an 11th letter in the campaign, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And sadly, there's many more.
Yeah.
There's the case of Rocky Myers in the United States, and he was a young man, now much older. He's been 30 years on death row in Alabama, death row for murder, despite an intellectual disability and flawed proceedings. He was found guilty of murder with very little evidence, a very poor representation. He has an intellectual disability, which of course made it difficult for him to understand what was going on and to speak up for himself. He was a child when this happened, and the call is to take him off death row.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems unusual that a highly developed Western North American country would be subject to human rights violations that Amnesty International has to address. But here we have two examples, right in Canada, right in the United States. How often does that happen, that the target letters go to United States or to Canada or to other quote-unquote developed countries?
I would say every year when we have our Right for Rights campaign, we would have at least one highly developed country being the focus of our letters. Last year, France was involved with a letter. We often have had cases in the United States, particularly around the death penalty.
Yeah.
In Canada, particularly around Indigenous peoples. Australia, Indigenous peoples.
Right.
And so if you were to add them all up together and be doing a sort of a statistical analysis, I think we would find that fewer cases are found in the so-called industrialized democratic countries, and that's good,
yeah.
I guess, because these are countries where there is the rule of law, and the cases that we draw to their attention are cases where the rule of law has somehow been pushed aside and that they can be held accountable in some ways more easily than in some other places where it's pretty hard to identify the rule of law anywhere at all. So it is terrible, on the one hand, to see that in these countries there still are human rights abuses.
Is it the case that for other countries it takes them a while to get the hang of democracy, of human rights, of the rule of law? And so once they've been around for 50, 100, 200 years or so, they'll finally get it?
I'm not sure if that's the case. It might be, in a way, partially the case, but there are many countries, like, for example, this year, Brazil, and Brazil has had, you know, lots of South American countries have had pretty viable democracies in the past that have also fallen under terrible dictatorships where human rights have been abused. So I'm not sure if it's like a straight path or it's more like it's up and down. Now, there's what's happening here, no, what's happening there. You sort of like guacamole on human rights. So the case this year in Brazil is about a young man who, in this case, another person who has been killed, a young man who was killed for organizing walks of peace. And these walks of peace were in response to violence from the police. So violent actions toward the police, from the police towards indigenous identified people, black people. And this young man was just organizing walks of peace to raise awareness of the police violence and saying that it needed to stop. And he himself was killed. And so it's his mother who is taking up the cause of having this murder properly investigated and having the people responsible brought to justice.
And then the campaign here is to the government
to
encourage that this is properly treated in the courts.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I think I'd like to get into the mechanics of how Right for Rights actually works. I think we'll take a bit of a musical break. This is Onion Honey, local band who released a Christmas album last year. This is called Christmas Comes by Rail.
Christmas time will soon be rolling, and the town
Onion Honey, Christmas Comes by Rail. Right for Rights is coming to you not by rail, but it's an in-person event this year, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Tell me what is actually happening. This is happening...
So it's happening on Saturday, tomorrow. From 11 till 4, drop in any time in there, but come early because there's lots to be done if you want to be involved. We're at the Kitchener Public Library in Meeting Room D, which is down in the basement, but we'll have people upstairs directing people to the right place if they need any help.
Mm-hmm.
And once people arrive, then we will have a package for them, so we're prepared. And in that package, we have the 10 letters that you can sign. If you want to write your own letter, you're welcome to do that too, so there'll be paper available for you to write your own letter. But we're not so used to writing letters these days, and writing a letter can be kind of a difficult challenge. So the letters include the information about the case, and so people can sign those letters and leave them there in the room with us. We'll take care of all the mailing, so they don't have to worry about going out and mailing them.
So the letters are already there and prepared,
yeah.
And really all that needs to happen is for people to come in to sign them.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, if you don't have too much time, you want to just sit down for a while. It might take a while. You know, you've got to sign each one. So there's 10 letters plus the petition for the Wet'suwet'en to sign.
Right.
And then after that, if people are still wanting to do more, then we'll have art materials on the table for making cards and information about each one of the cases and ideas on what would be an appropriate image to put on your card and what you might want to say. We've got a few phrases available in other languages that are, you know, this is right, this is what we're saying, we support you, that kind of thing.
And these cards aren't necessarily Christmas cards, they're...
Right. The cards that we'll have, we have a whole bunch of cards with nothing on them at all, and then they're set for people to put on their own images.
Okay.
Plus, we have a pile of cards that will have, like, a picture of a poinsettia or a flower or a nice view or something like that, that are just basically note cards that people can put a message on the inside.
Right.
So if there's a particular case, for example, that really struck someone and struck them personally, that might be one they'd want to sit down and write out a note to the person involved saying, you know, like, oh, this is awful. Here you are, a mother. Your son has been killed for doing good work. How proud you must be of your son, and how sorry I am that it has come to that, and I support you in your fight to get justice. You know, that kind of thing.
So people are encouraged to sit down, understand the issue, and then possibly write from their own heart to the governments or the individuals
that's right.
Standard letters are being addressed to.
That's right. So there's a variety of things that could be done. For people who don't have very much time at all, we have a QR code that they can take a picture of, and that will take them directly to the Amnesty International Right for Rights website that has online petitions. And so all the online petitions are accessed from that one spot. So if people just come and talk to us for a while and say, hey, what's going on? I don't have any more time, but just take a picture of that. And they can, with just a few little, you know, clicks, off they go, and they can send those.
Right. 11 to 4 is a long time to be sitting there writing letters. So you're not expecting people to be there for the entire 5 hours.
No, probably not. There'll be some of our volunteers who will be there that whole time, but mostly just to do what you like, signing the letters or whatever. It could be a half an hour if you were wanting to do a few cards as well.
Right. Where do the letters come from? Who writes the standard letters?
This time I wrote them.
Oh.
So basically that's what I spend my time doing, right? There's some ideas for what should go in a letter that come from the Amnesty International Right for Rights website, and I use those, but then I put in about, we're from Kitchener-Waterloo, and I also add more information about each case in the letters, because I'm thinking of people coming in and signing them, and it's very helpful that, you know, okay, you've got a letter in front of you. The relevant information is there. If they want to find out more about that particular case than what is in the letter, then I've got my binder here with more information on every case that they could have a look at, as well as, you know, links to the Right for Rights website that has more information as well.
Right. So this is the first time you're doing this in person again after a bit of an absence.
Yeah, that's right. We were, the last time we did that was in the December 2019, before COVID hit.
Right.
And then for 2020 and 2021 and 2022, we kept up with the Right for Rights campaign, but we didn't have an in-person event. So okay. What we did then was we did our own little blitz, email blitz, 10 days in a row. We called it 10 Days for Human Rights. And each day we sent information about one of the cases with a sample letter, a link to a video, and some ideas on how to do a card, and encouraged people to get together in their bubbles and to do something every day those 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, one of our members had a mailbox placed safely outside the house,
okay.
Labeled Right for Rights, and people brought their letters to that house, and then we sorted the letters and mailed them all out.
Okay. So it wasn't an email campaign. It wasn't that people were emailing letters to foreign governments encouraging them to take action.
No, the email was going from Group 9 to our extensive list of people who agreed to be receiving emails from us over time. We do have actually an email this year on our campaign, and that's to the government of Tunisia. So from our information from Amnesty, they weren't thinking that there was a good address to send letters to in Tunisia. Uh-huh. And so we are asked to send an email to the president of Tunisia. And there's information okay. on that. So I've sent my email, and I was thinking, well, this feels really different from sending a letter. Now they have my email address.
Yes.
But anyway.
Otherwise they might have. Are there return addresses on the letters that are being sent?
Generally what we ask people to do is to put their name, the name of their city, Canada, and the postal code. So that's a pretty good identifier okay. that, you know, you're a real person. It's not some made-up thing. But it doesn't give your exact address, so if okay. people are concerned about any kind of repercussions.
Postal code is pretty yeah. geographically precise. I mean, that puts you down within a block of,
mm-hmm.
so.
Yeah.
Not. I don't know how comfortable I would be sending my address or my postal code to mm-hmm. a repressive foreign government.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I don't think, personally, I don't think you are in danger, but I do think that some people are. For example, if we were sending a letter to the government of Iran and you were from Iran living in Canada and had relatives still back home,
yes.
I think that it wouldn't be a good idea to include your whole address, and maybe you might even hesitate putting your name down on something like that.
I can see that.
Because it is a government that is known for having very long tentacles, and you know, like you might not personally be in danger, but your family back home could face some repercussions.
Right.
And so people are concerned about that. There are certain countries in particular that would be worth, you know, being careful about.
Right, right. So I've come to the library. I've read the letters. I've made some cards and done some drawings. My drawing skills are terrible, so I'm not sure how much that would be appreciated.
It probably would be. That's yeah. called cartooning.
Ah. And what happens then? So I've written the letter. They all get put into envelopes?
We take care of that.
You take care of that?
Yeah.
All right. And if I can't make it to the library, can I still participate?
Yes. Of course, people can participate by going to the Amnesty International Right for Rights, a website which is www.writeathon.ca. Or just straight to the Amnesty International Canada website. There is all of the information is available there, so you could write your own letters if you wanted to, take your time and write them. If anyone would like to contact Group 9, we are at Group 9, all one word, small letters, and then the number 9, group99@gmail.com. If you email us, we could send you a package of the letters if you can't even make it okay. to the library. We have them all. We could send them to you, and then you take your time, sign them if that's what you want to do. That would be great.
Okay.
The post, our post office at a member's home is still available this year, so there are some people we know who probably won't be able to make it to the library, and they're on our email list. They all receive the letters, and some of them will probably be dropping the letters off at the Right for Rights mailbox, okay, which is going to be outside again, and that address is available for people who email us. We'll send them the address, okay, so they know where to send their letters.
So what I can do is in our show notes, mm-hmm, is put a link to the PDF file that contains the package of all the letters. So if any listeners can't make it to the library tomorrow, then they can print that off, sign the letters, and there'll be information in that package on where to drop them off.
Okay. And
how long is the Dropbox available?
Till the 15th, I think.
Okay, so another week or
yeah,
so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, that's good. So, having done that, what does Group 9 do with the letters once they're received? Do you send them yourself to the destinations, or do you send them off to a central depot at Amnesty?
We'll send them off to the destination. So we do fundraising during the year, and so we have money for postage. That's one of the things that might slow people down. So, and we always are glad to accept donations for postage. But anyway, we will be sending them off in envelopes so that if we get, say, 50 letters to go to the United Empire, UAE, then we'll put that in one envelope and send it.
Okay, so the 15 letters get bundled together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they arrive as a single item. I guess that saves on postage.
Mm-hmm. And most of the cards will be going to Amnesty International offices in areas closest to where the people are to be receiving them.
Who would then deliver to the final destination.
That's right. They make a personal delivery. I know previous years we've had a Wet'suwet'en campaign where cards were basically sent to the BC office of Amnesty International, and then the people from that office personally went to Wet'suwet'en territory and delivered all of the cards of support.
Okay.
So that's the kind of thing I would expect to be happening, and then that's kind of like a great happy party when people receive these letters.
I can see that for the recipients of those people who are being repressed, the subjects of the letter.
Mm-hmm.
But how about the governments and the kingdoms? How well is Amnesty International received by the people doing the repressing?
Well, that's a tough one. I know that internationally, Amnesty International is well respected for its impartiality and its solid research on the human rights cases. So I think that the receiving governments have to treat what they get from Amnesty International with a degree of respect because of the respect that Amnesty International has around the world from all of the governments together.
Right. So having that reputation really aids in bringing these 10 cases this year to light, or these 11 cases to light.
Right. They know that, and of course when they get something like 600,000 letters, they know that Amnesty has a large following and that people are trusting the information they get from Amnesty, and they're actually aware of exactly what is going on in that country.
Yeah. Is there any leverage applied in these cases? Threats of sanctions or economic boycotts, that sort of idea? Or is it just, are the letters just relying on the goodwill of the people that are receiving them?
There's nothing that Amnesty International could do in the way of sanctions or, any economic pressure or anything like that, I don't think. That's something that other governments could, like sanctions in particular, that other governments could apply. And the only way that that Amnesty would be involved in something like that, I think, would be in kind of indirectly by putting pressure on our own government, say, to apply sanctions.
Right. Does that happen? Are there campaigns like that, aside from Right for Rights?
I can't remember a particular situation where Amnesty International pushed for sanctions, but I know that they have supported, that call.
All right. So when a government, the Canadian government, for example, decides to apply sanctions for some human rights violation in another country, Amnesty will back that that idea. What happens after Right for Rights is over? So December 15th rolls around, the drop box is closed off. What do the Amnesty International Group 9 people do?
Oh, we meet regularly, once a month, the first Tuesday of every month, and our meeting place is generously supplied at Conrad Grable College. And when we get together, we work on cases sometimes. We try to educate ourselves, so we often will have a speaker. Sometimes that speaker is from our own group, because people in Group 9 have many different backgrounds and can tell us about what their experience has been. And then there are campaigns that we always are involved in, or places that we're always putting a table up at. So we always participate in the multicultural festival in May of every year in the park.
Victoria Park.
Victoria Park in Kitchener. Yeah. And we always are part of, or we have been part of the powwow put on by the Waterloo Indigenous students in Waterloo. This year was the first time again since COVID that we participated, and that was, you know, very important for us.
I've been to many of these events and found your table there, where you generally have a number of petitions available for signing.
That's right.
Information about the various campaigns going on. And yeah, so you've got my signature on quite a few of those. And if you have a petition with you today, I wouldn't mind signing that for the Wet'suwet'en today.
Oh, very good. Yeah, I do have it.
All right. We'll
I never travel without a petition.
So those are at the festivals. So you've got a group of core volunteers. About how many people are involved in Group 9?
I'd say we have a group of about 12 to 15 people that would come out regularly to meetings. And then we have another group of about 20 people who would show up to various events. And then a larger group that receive our emails and that we don't hear too much from, except that we know they're receiving the emails and they're glad to continue receiving them. And often, like, we will send out an email if there's a situation, you know, an urgent action or something. We'll send that an email out to our entire list and ask people to sign the online petition. And we also let people know about events that are taking place locally that Amnesty is not necessarily sponsoring, but that we support. For example, tonight there is the vigil that will be held at Waterloo Town Square, that's been held every Friday since September for climate change, being aware of climate change and what's going on, and thinking that we need to be doing something immediate. Right now it's urgent, that kind of thing. We do support lots of other activities and make sure that people on our list know what's going on locally.
Right. How can people get involved? If somebody else has an interest in human rights and wants to join Group 9?
They just send us an email and say they want to come, and just check to see that we are having a meeting that first Tuesday of the month, and come on out. We welcome new members all the time.
That's group99@gmail.com. So GROUPNINE
#9
at Gmail. I have all that information on our show notes, radiowaterloo.ca/CCC, as well as links to the package of letters.
Good.
Is there a cost to being an Amnesty International member?
No. And if you make a donation at all to Amnesty International Canada, then you are automatically a member and you can vote on things like who's in charge and other issues. They have annual general meeting that's open to all their members. So,
What's that structure like? Is Group 9 an officially sanctioned chapter, or just a...
Oh, yes, we are. So, and it's quite interesting that we're number 9. There are many, many groups in Canada, and when they started up with having kind of local groups be part of Amnesty, Group 9, as you can imagine, it's like the 9th group that signed up out of, now there's hundreds of groups in Canada. And it's been ongoing I'm not quite sure when it started. People who have been involved for a long time say it was like around the 1970s.
Right.
So it's been going a long time.
And Amnesty itself, Amnesty International itself, has been around longer than that, I would think.
Yes, but after World War II. So I think it was really like 1960, around then.
Okay, that's a good long time, some, what, 60, 65 years or so.
That's right, and it started with a person who was aware of a human rights abuse and in Spain and started a letter-writing campaign, and it kind of took off from there.
Okay, so Amnesty International, in spite of the name International, was a local event in Spain.
It was a British person who started it,
who
was aware of the situation in Spain and wrote
Incident was in Spain a British person responded to.
Yeah.
Okay. And now it's international, of course.
Yes, yeah. And there are Amnesty International kind of nodes all around the world, so there's a big, the sort of headquarters, the headquarters is London, England, okay. But there's a place like Sri Lanka has a center, and South Africa, and I think it's Mexico in the Americas. I think about five around the world that are real sort of like the nodes that have large numbers of people. And what happens with those places is that they have the researchers. They have people who go out and actually put their lives on the line to find out what's going on. So when there's, you know, the research of these human rights abuses, it's on-the-ground research.
Okay. Can you just quickly recap what's happening tomorrow?
Okay, so tomorrow we're at KPL from 11 to 4 in Meeting Room D. And you can come down, you can sign one letter, you can sign 10 letters, you can sign a petition, you can make some cards of support, meet some really nice and interesting people. And stand up for human rights.
Excellent. Been talking to Margaret Jackson from the Amnesty International Group 9 chapter here in Kitchener-Waterloo about Right for Rights. Get involved, write your letter, come to the library, and spread some joy in the world. You've been listening to CKMS Community Connections for the 8th of December, 2023. My name is Bob Jonkman. CKMS Community Connections is produced at Radio Waterloo, is sponsored by Radio Waterloo. Executive producer is Jennifer Strong, associate producer is Jeff Stager. The theme music is written by Stephen Todd. CKMS Community Connections airs every Monday at 11 and alternate Fridays at 3 p.m.